Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast. Osiris.
It's Isaac Sloan here with a very special December edition of Inappropriate Happiness. And to my left, that's your left as well, because you're me, is Ithaca Times subject of the week, Karina Reichman. What's going on?
Dude, hi. Ithaca Times, man. Good throwback. I love that. Hi, Isaac. It's great to see you. I am excellent. It's amazing to be here on your left. That would be your left. It's wonderful. We're here at home after the word tumultuous is maybe it's a little too aggressive, but I don't even have the words. A really crazy tour. Insane. Above my wildest expectations for how that could have went. Thank you to all the fans who came out and who are listening now. You blow me away, baby. You blow me away.
It seemed to just get better and better.
It ramped up like I wasn't even ready for it to ramp up like that. You know what I mean? It's just like completely absurd. By the second week, it was just like, whoa, like sold out shows and just like nuts to butts. I couldn't believe it. It was crazy.
And that was like a natural progression. Like it felt like there was wind in your sails as a result of the tour, you know, continuing on.
It's a good lesson in that, you know, yeah. And it's like one of those things where you like, you know, things start slow, but then I think that tends to happen to people who go on tour and like, you know, the shows towards the end, like there's more momentum. You've posted about them a million times. There's a lot of word of mouth. People are talking about it, like, you know, telling their friends in different cities like, hey, I just saw this in Portsmouth. If you're in DC, you should see it on Saturday. And I feel like that's exactly what happened, which was insane. And I'm overwhelmed with gratitude for everybody who came and you know, made it absolutely rain with us. We were so thrilled. And again, just thank you from the bottom of my heart. Crazy tour. I cannot wait to tour more in 2023. And I feel like, you know, now I feel like I've got it a little bit more down to a science, except Isaac, there was a... The real craziness that went down was after the Connecticut gig, we were all ready to load out, right? And my light guy, Jeff, went to look for his jacket that was hung up in the green room that we did share with the opening band and a few other, you know, just people who worked at the club, whatever. Anyway, his jacket had been mistakenly taken by somebody who had the exact same jacket, which meant that the van keys were gone. And this happens at 1:30 a.m. We were supposed to drive from Connecticut to the city that night to sleep one night in our own bed before heading to D.C. the next day. That, you know, 1:30 becomes 2:30, which becomes 3:30 in the morning. We're calling everybody in there. Shit is absolutely crazy. Anyway, what ends up happening is we locate the gentleman who very mistakenly took the keys at, you know, 3:45 in the morning. And he runs back to the club. I got us hotel rooms 5 minutes from the club. Jeff, my light guy, shout out Jeff Volkhausen, you know, gets a 5 minute Uber back to the club and loads the van by himself at 4 a.m. with help from the GM, shout out Eric from Park City Music Hall. So that was just like one of those times where like we all went to bed, like we were just like, didn't know what was going to happen, you know? And then it all righted itself. We made it to DC. We had a packed van first thing in the morning, thanks to Jeff and thanks to Eric. But, you know, that was the one real snafu of the whole thing. Everything else ran like, you know, a well-oiled machine. And that was just like, wow, you know, you can't prepare for something like that.
I mean, Jeffrey Volkhausen.
Talk about a good guy.
Talk about an amazing guy. Heart of gold. Hilarious person.
One of my favorites to walk this earth, really.
And, you know, it would be good to have him on as a guest, I think, at some point, because he really is committed to his craft, you know, lighting design and also, you know, getting out on the road and being part of a crew.
Big time. And he's great at it. He's the exact type of guy that you want to wake up to. He has that fucking, you know, you wake up and that guy's there, you're stoked for what the day has to offer. And it can be, you know, dreary, raining, cold, nightmare, no sleep, like whatever it might be. And if you wake up and Jeff's there with a smile and a joke funnier than you've ever imagined, you're good to go, you know? So shout out, Jeff, and thank you for being the best road dog I could ever ask for. You are the best.
Well, Karina, another exciting thing that I don't think many people really know about today... You and I got to see the first cut of a documentary that's being made about you.
Dude, I'm so glad you were there to witness this first cut with me, which is crazy. And yeah, I mean, obviously this is not something that we've shared with the world, and we're going to break it to the very fervent and few inappropriate happiness listeners. And by that, I mean everyone who listens to this podcast. Thank you so much. You know, you guys get the hot goss. You get the hot goss right off the presses because it's, you know, when you're verbalizing these things and you're talking about your crazy life, it's all going to come out anyway. So, yes, these two very lovely gentlemen who shall remain nameless as of now are creating a documentary about me. And I had very wonderful audience to see the rough cut and give feedback, basically. With Isaac, my boyfriend Johnny, my manager Nick, my dear friend Monica, who makes documentaries in her own right, you know.
And is a very powerful person.
She is one of the greatest, one of the greatest. And that was the whole squad, and it was wonderful. And it's really one of those, you know, when you're watching yourself do the stupidest and say the stupidest things over the last 2 years, it's really, it's humbling, Isaac. I said a lot of really dumb shit in that documentary.
Well, it was interesting because I guess we met these documentarians in early 2021.
Correct.
And it was still very much a locked down time in terms of the amount of shows happening and what artists could really do. And it's kind of amazing to see the evolution in ways that I think we didn't expect when we went in to see the first cut. And, you know, it was great to be able to talk with the documentarians and amongst ourselves about, you know, actually having so much more of a clear vision for what to present on film of your last little bit here.
Totally. And like you say, you know, in you know, say March of 2021, we were just like, we had no idea, like I, you know, we had no idea what would come in the next, you know, year and a half, 2 years, you know, in terms of all this stuff. So from when they started, we were just like, oh, they're going to make like a crazy art film about me. Like, that's awesome, whatever. And now it's like much more directed and focused in, and we're talking about cutting out a good chunk of it to make it more focused and whatnot. It was a humbling and wild experience to see that and to, like, you know, be so aligned with you and my manager and dear, like, you know, nearest and dearest pals in terms of where to take it and how to focus in like that, you know.
Well, you know, another thing the listeners probably don't know about, we met these fellas who are making this film right before we went and played two gigs on the island of St. John.
I forgot we played two.
In like a salt mine?
In a salt mine. That is absolutely right.
On a cliff overlooking the Caribbean.
It was a pretty surreal thing. You know, were there tapers there, Isaac? I don't know.
We have some video footage and a little bit of audio as well, but I don't think there's a proper tape of it.
For the record, this is just Isaac and I duo. No drums, no nothing. And we played such hits such as, you know, Tom Petty's Breakdown. I was dancing in the lesbian bar.
Twist,
Gumbo.
I sang Bertha.
You did a great Bertha. No Rain.
And Karina's originals. Like we played
Plants.
Plants.
We played Goji Island.
A great Goji Island.
A
Elevator, I believe.
Wow. I mean, look at us. Really.
To some turtles.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we played to the turtles.
It was pretty shocking. The whole thing was insane. And we were just gearing up to leave when these guys came over to our house for the first time to film us.
So there's the two of us playing the song Plants, Karina's first single, just in the living room.
Yeah, which is pretty interesting footage.
But I'm very excited for this to come out. This little film about you and actually just excited to see its evolution because, I don't know, it kind of got an exciting taste today.
It felt exciting. And I, you know, it's been sort of, I don't know, it's probably inaccurate to say, but it feels like it's been a minute when I've seen a real work in progress and people give their feedback and see how things can be refined over time and focused in and your look and you take all the extra stuff out of there and try to just get to the crux of the message you're trying to deliver. And it's a really kind of compelling thing in narrative form or otherwise, you know, and it's going to be exciting. So stay tuned for that in Appropriate Happiness, listeners. We can't wait to tell you more about it. But man, great to see the first cut with you, Isaac. Thank you for coming to that.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
You're all over it.
Totally.
As you should be.
Well, other news that caught our attention today.
Yes.
The Days Between New Orleans Festival was announced. The Days Between refers to the days between the two weekends of Jazz Fest in New Orleans. These are the first days of May.
Boom.
And there are special shows that happen all around New Orleans. My first Jazz Fest, I did both weekends and stayed for the Days Between, and it was very, very special. There is, in true Jazz Fest New Orleans fashion, a kind of have your own adventure kind of sentiment. But these shows that were announced today are certainly going to ground the festivities because it is two nights of the band Goose. What can we say about Goose? We love them.
It's enormous. It's crazy.
Enormous. It's crazy.
They have a fully sold out tour in the spring or winter/spring, which is just riveting. Basically, all the tickets went and it's insane. And now we have this, which takes place during the Days Between. And, you know, it's two nights of Goose with some very, very special acts, many near and dear to our hearts, which we will extrapolate upon in a second for these two nights. We want to read off the night one?
Yeah, absolutely. So night one is Tuesday, May 2nd, and that features The Quickening, Jay and the Causeways, Melt, shout out to our producer Marlo Shankweiler.
Boom.
Lawrence, shout out to Lawrence, another New York City band. Tank and the Bangas.
New Orleans' finest.
And then, yes, a show from Goose as well.
Incredible.
And then the next night, you can come back, or day, Wednesday, May 3rd, Honey Island Swamp Band, Eggy, George Porter Jr., Neil Francis, and David Shaw, followed by a headlining set from Goose.
Incredible. Incredible. And of course, for us to see Melt on this lineup is very, very near and dear to our hearts. They are our closest friends, and Marlo Shankweiler, guitar player extraordinaire, produces this podcast and plays a shredding lead guitar in this band. Do not miss it. And of course, you know, to see our pal Neil Francis, whom I have the, you know, great privilege of playing with on New Year's Eve this year at Cervantes in Denver, Colorado. My band is opening for his. kind of rising the ranks into this sort of, you know, it's an amazing thing to see his sort of rise on the scene, if you will. And he's, you know, his Tipitina's gig just went up and allegedly only a few tickets, you know, remain for that. And I think New Orleans is such an excellent home for him and his music and his vibe. So that's very exciting. Of course, anytime you see George Porter, you get excited. Buddy David Shaw of Revivalist fame making it rain on that day. And our good friends here from, you know, Connecticut, Eggy, alive and well, kicking it down, making it rain. It's just great to see, you know, our friends and colleagues peppered all over this thing and people we have admired for generations.
And all of this takes place at the Faubourg.
Yeah. Is that how you say it? I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, let's hope that's how you say it.
I like it.
And I'll be there.
Dude, I hope to be there.
At least for the Tuesday.
Sure.
And I plan on throwing my hands in the air.
I think you and a lot of people, Isaac, will have their hands way, way up. And as they should, this is very exciting. We are thrilled for the band Goose, as we talk about often on this podcast. It's just been absolutely captivating to watch everything that they've announced and everything that they've done in the last, you know, year and a half. It's really a remarkable thing. So amazing lineup, and what a great way to spend the days between. Of course, this is going to be one of many incredible events, I have no doubt, that sort of punctuates the in between the two weekends, which really is, it's a special time down there. The days between, I mean, it's less absolutely balls out fucking bananas, but it comes with it its own devious swagger voodoo mystical vibe.
Definitely. I feel like I'm still learning how to be a Goose fan.
Sure.
Because like other bands like the Disco Biscuits, for instance, were like, oh yeah, sorry if you don't, the Disco Biscuits rage fire.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then Fish were like, oh my god, here it comes. We must prepare ourselves to be taken on a journey like no other.
We are not worthy.
It's Fish. But with Goose, it's kind of like, for a long time, we've been like, wow, they're so on the rise. And now I feel like that is still true.
Amen.
But I'm ready to have a different experience of being a Goose fan.
I think 2023 will usher in a sort of new era for fans like yourself and mine, because the ways in which people will interact in and like with the band, with the music, with the whole thing are going to change as they cement themselves as this sort of absolute juggernaut amongst the other bands. And, you know, their place in the scene is just becoming more and more, you know, like you can't ignore it. You know what I mean?
No, you totally can't ignore it. And I'm just, I guess it's with excitement that I say, you know, I'm ready to have that experience with them.
It's really, it's an amazing thing. You and me both. So we look forward to seeing you down there at the Days Between. This is put on, I believe, by our friends at Live for Live Music and our friends at Relics. Amazing
Day
curation.
Glow.
Yep. Day Glow, making it rain. And this is exciting stuff. We're stoked for Marlo Shankweiler to really blaze a hetty fire on the bayou, which we know she will for the first time.
Speaking of friends, other friends of yours, really, I don't know these people.
Cool.
Have announced some dates today. Guster.
Ah.
Who you just saw at Carnegie Hall.
Dude.
Announced some March and April dates.
Unbelievable. Including a show at the Capitol Theater.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, is not, you know, in our backyard, but it sort of is in our backyard, you know? It's a stone's throw.
New York area shows. We got the Paramount in Huntington on Long Island. We got White Eagle Hall in Jersey City.
You know,
they're definitely doing some Northeast. They got Philly. We got Providence, Rhode Island. But they're also, you know, there's a New Orleans date. They're kind of all over the place. But you just saw them at Carnegie Hall. So let's talk about that.
Dude, I mean, you know, I can't even, words cannot describe what I felt for my friends up there at Carnegie Hall. It's, you know, I suffice to say, Isaac, I know quite a few bands at this point. I've met, you know, quite a few in my day, and I will go on record right here as saying that there is not a band on this planet that is nicer than Guster. And Guster, for that reason alone, I love these guys more than words can tell, and that means every single one of them. They are charming, delightful, pleasant as can be, and just the sweetest, sweetest bunch of dudes. So I love them unequivocally. I have had the great pleasure of opening for them, I think more than any other band, which is incredible. I've opened for them with Marco, I want to say upwards of 10 times, and then with my band once in 2019 at Higher Ground. And, you know, may this only mean more shows with Guster, because I love to open for them any chance possible. And I've just never, you know, the way that they are so warm to us is incredible. And seeing them at Carnegie Hall, just like doing it so proper and doing it so, like, you know, it was intimate, even though that's an enormous room. You know what I mean? They made it feel special and intimate, which is a beautiful thing.
And there's like a whole familial dimension to this. I know Johnny Beach, his whole extended family is very interested in Guster. Your guitar player, Adam November's family, is very interested in Guster.
Guster families.
There's a college in the early 2000s component. I'm just thinking, you know, coming off of the how do we embrace Goose in the many different ways that remain to be seen kind of way, there's some sense of how that's gone with Guster in the past.
Guster is an amazing example of a band that, you know, had, you know, kind of in the late 90s, these sort of tactics for fan conversion. Well, I don't know what to even call
it,
you know.
This is interesting.
And this is interesting, actually. And so, you know, Guster was formed at Tufts University, right? And they're Boston, you know, folk for that reason, even though they're from, you know, other places, but they formed there. And Guster basically had a, you know, call it what you will, a small army of their fans that they would meet at these shows and whatnot, that they would then give secret names to and would indoctrinate them into their, like, Guster cult community, call it what you will. And those kids, one of which, you know, ended up being Johnny Beach, my longtime boyfriend, and, you know, who went on to be this kind of illustrious concert promoter, among other people who worked in the music business, were Guster sort of champions in the beginning. And they, you know, Johnny's code name was Coolio, and they would send him in the mail an empty Fruit Loops box full of Guster CDs. And they would say, hey, Coolio, go to your school and distribute all these CDs to your friends. And little things like that in the pre-internet age, where now it's like it comes as a given almost. You're just in constant contact with people, right? And like devising these ways in which you are connecting with your fans via the digital realm. That is a pretty savant way to disseminate your music into every high school and college throughout America.
No kidding.
You gotta say. And they have this way about them of like, you know, their fans are fans for life. 30-year career, as strong as ever, and it is a baffling and incredible thing for both them, you know, and their fans alike. And they had this way of just like making lifelong fans, and they care so much about the fan to band relationship in a way that I'd be hard pressed to find you another band that does that, went to those lengths the way Guster did and continues to, which is an amazing thing.
I really love to hear it.
It's wild, right?
It's very wild. My third grade teacher, Miss Rutman, loves Guster.
Love her for that.
I don't know what her code name was.
Dude, maybe it was Coolio 2.
Coolio the third.
Dude, and a lot of people who went on to, you know, work in the music business in sort of very, you know, profound and palpable ways started out as Guster reps. That's what they were called, Guster reps. And among them, yeah, Johnny Beach, he was out there definitely disseminating the CDs in his Westchester High School, which is incredible. And then, you know, forming very close personal relationships with the band members, you know, to the point where when Johnny's family goes to Guster shows, they know every single member of the family intimately, and it's really, and they treat them like family. It's really a wild wild thing to behold. So shout out Guster. Go to a Guster show. Get your familial vibes on. They write timeless American classic rock and roll music, and it's a beautiful thing. I am a huge fan. So shout out to these guys. I hope we can do more shows together.
Well, Karina, I know the Reich fam, your Facebook community, right? Is that what you call
That's
it?
That's accurate.
Are interested in our free associative episodes.
That is correct.
And I believe you surveyed their interests and have different words for us to free associate about today.
That is super correct, Isaac. That is super correct. Are you going to go first or am I going to go first? Are we going to do two words and we're both going to do the same word?
I think we should both free associate. I mean, because it's not like we're asking of each other. Like, this is fan-sourced stuff.
Correct.
So we can put out two words and then maybe you'll go first.
And we'll each do two words.
And we'll each do two words.
Perfect. I love it.
So the first word is gravity.
Beautiful thing. Thank you for this word, my Reich fam. Love you to the moon and back. You see, gravity, when I first think about gravity, I think about the John Mayer song. I'm not going to lie to you. I also, you know, like the gravity of the situation definitely, you know, comes in. I'm just going through all the definitions of gravity, right? Meaning things are grave. Oh my God, like the gravity of the situation is so intense. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe I should bump down the gravity of the situation in my own head so that I could better deal with the reality of the situation. That's a good one. And then, you know, gravity being the thing that keeps us all clung to this fiery, burning rock in the sky. It's a miraculous thing, you know? So between, I think, the three or four definitions or you know, free associative sort of first impressions I get from the word, yeah, I mean, my favorite is definitely the literal sort of being clung here and jumping and coming back down. I think there's something to that.
Well, I think there's also kind of a binary with gravity, because it's either there is gravity or you're in zero gravity.
Yo, zero gravity, it's what's up. I knew you had to take it there. Talk to me, baby. Talk to me.
I'm kind of interested in like what happened if we had 80% gravity.
Yo, you just float a little bit.
And you could float a little bit, but you could also hunker yourself down if you needed to.
I think I would prefer that to any sort of, you know, earthly definition of gravity that we have right now. You know what I mean?
I think I would also prefer it to zero gravity because, yeah, absolutely, you know, you could still have some semblance of a normal existence.
You could stay down.
If you wanted to get a little crazy on a windy day and get carried off a little bit and just like tread the air for a while, you could also roll that way.
Isaac, I would love to tread the air for a while.
Don't you think?
Oh my God, let me tell, I would love to. It would be fabulous.
All right, so the other word we have to free associate on is pens.
All right, pens. I love pens, Isaac. It makes me think of the walking tour of South Beach in Miami that I gave to my band when we played Miami this time last year. And I have basically a stretch of South Beach where, you know, most people go to South Beach to party their tits off. Not me. I like to go and see how many pens from hotel lobbies I can take, because there's actually at the Setai, which is a very fancy hotel in South Beach I could never afford to stay at. Absolutely not. But I like, they have this one pen that is incredibly heavy and black and gold and beautiful. And every time I go to Miami, I make sure to go to the Setai to get the pens. But basically, you know, from like the Delano all the way up to the W, it's a tour that involves pool hopping in as many of the pools that you can break into and stealing as many pens from these hotels that you possibly can. So that's my first thing I think about when I think about pens. And what about you?
I actually think about how you collect a lot of pens from places like that, and then sometimes I end up with one of them in my bag and I'm in another place and I'm like, what is this pen? And then I figure it's yours.
Amen, baby. You see, the South Beach walking tour of pens is really seeping into the fabric of this zero gravity household.
It's a kind of underrated merch item, little trinket, little gift bag. You know, token gift.
Big time. Let me tell you. Would never show me a Bic pen. You know, one of those shitty, fucking terrible pens that you would get like as a kid before school started or whatever. Absolutely not. And basically, when I see a nice pen at a restaurant or a hotel or something like that that isn't that, I just automatically am like, oh my God, at least it's not one of those horrible Bic pens that drive me absolutely crazy. You know what I mean? So that's maybe the mental part of that. And I like, yeah, it's a good memento. You know, like I also really like a box of matches, you know, a matchbox.
Totally.
But I like only the ones that are loose inside, not the ones that you have to tear. No tearing.
At one point, I was trying to work on my handwriting.
I remember that, actually. That was interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
How'd it go?
If I'm focused about it and I'm conscientious about it, it definitely, my handwriting is better.
Sure.
But I don't bring a lot of that focus and attention to writing with a pen all
sure.
that often.
I was writing with a pen in bed the other night, and I was wildly frustrated with the fact that my mind moved 17,000, you know, more miles per hour than my hand was willing to write, you know. And when I type, I feel like it can be sort of a, you know, you're thinking your thoughts and getting them on the page at, you know, your mind probably moves a little bit faster, but your fingers can kind of keep up with your brain a little bit better. Whereas with the pen, I was wildly frustrated that I had all these words and thoughts that my hand was cramping up. It was a complete nightmare. And I, you know, really, I love the act of writing something down, like in a real, like tangible matter. I think there's something really to it, but I remember being very annoyed that it wasn't going as fast as I would have liked it to. And on that topic, you know, my dear friend Mook, the promoter in Washington, D.C., I was settling with him just the other night, and he was telling me that his daughter, who's in third grade, you know, they're not teaching her how to write. And like all these rote mechanical things that you can do on a computer, their excuse is just like, well, you can do it on a computer, so we don't really need to teach anybody how to properly write.
I also heard people are not learning to read like with phonics, and they're just learning to read by like the first letters of a word and the last letters of the word, and then you guess.
Get the fuck out of here.
And then apparently there's like running into all of these problems with kids who learn to read that way because it gets more complicated than that as you go on in the world.
You know, these things are just shocking. It makes me want to tie
amazing.
My tubes tomorrow. Like, it's insane that
it's
we're living like that.
Different.
Like, you know, the idea, because, like, you know, aren't we always going to have to, like, address a envelope? Like, I don't know, write your name on some fucking sign-up sheet? Like, you can't do everything on the computer. I guess you almost can, but like that definitely shocked me when my dear promoter friend told me they're not teaching his daughter how to write. I was like, wait, I'm sorry. What? They're like, no, she's typing. What? Yeah, they're typing. Like, that is just crazy. So all in all, I still believe in the pen, the power of, you know, one stroke at a time. There's something very meditative about it, you know, and that goes to show, like, you know, the fact that I'm frustrated with my mind moving faster than the pen, it's a good thing, you know. You should slow down a little bit and take your time and think about the strokes that you're making on the page, and, like, you know, it's good for you. So fuck all this, you know, we need to be as productive as possible and we only do things on the computer because it's going to be more effective and you can type in this and you can blah, blah, blah. No, kids should learn how to write. I don't, you know, they don't need to teach cursive. It's okay. We can do away with cursive if you ask me, but you should learn how to write.
Well, cursive, I don't even know like what the theory is behind that. Like, it's about a kind of sense of etiquette, or
it feels a little outmoded to me. To me, it's not only is it outmoded, it feels pretentious in a way that I don't care to really interact with at all. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
But he was telling me that his daughter was like, you know, ones were facing the wrong way, you know, when you do like a, and all like that sort of thing. And I don't know what else he told me, but just stuff like, wow, you know, you probably should learn that at this point. So all in all, big pen fan, Isaac. I think they're great, especially the one from the Satay in South Beach, Miami. That's the pen for me.
I'm with that.
Dude.
I saw this tweet that I dug up just in this little time here, and I don't know anything about any of this, so it's going to be interesting when I read it.
Dude.
But this person posted, Eric Satie never used to open the letters he received, but he always answered them. And it's a photo of an excerpt from a book that says, "I'm not going to read any more emails." And it's basically about how Eric Satie would check the sender's name and address and write a reply to every letter he received without reading it. And after he died, the friends found all of the unopened letters, and the letters were published alongside the replies. And somebody commented and just said, "This is an amazing correspondence in which everyone is talking about different things," which of course is the essence of dialogue.
Holy shit. Is it the essence of dialogue, though?
I don't know, because I read that and I thought, like, okay, I get that that's kind of an entertaining, like, perspective to say everyone is always talking about a different thing.
Sure.
But I don't think that's really true.
I don't really think that's true either, even though I understand what that's rooted in. You know what I mean? Like, I can entertain, like, yes, we all come with our own very differing perspectives based on our own very differing upbringing, circumstances, understanding of things, conception of various things. But no, I think there a dialogue presupposes that there is a common, you know, otherwise you're just talking at somebody. Dialogue presupposes you are, you know, conversing and, you know, understanding at least a little bit.
I completely agree. And when I answer, especially when I answer somebody's written correspondence,
oh, yeah,
I try to stay as close to what they've written in my response as I possibly can. So it's not as though I've left a sort of jarring omission to something that they've asked me.
Right.
You know, I try to stay pretty close in my correspondence.
One would hope you would, you know. That is it's an interesting sort of very avant-garde attempt at understanding communication and something in that sort of realm, you know? And it's like, I see where they're coming from, but I'm sort of, it's a little too off base for me to be like, yeah.
I agree. I'm just glad we took it up.
Absolutely. No, we had to. You know, we had to. And in written correspondence especially, I think you're absolutely right. But verbal as well, and just like, you know, there should be sort of it's not even that you have to understand the other person, but you have to hear them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and be like, I'm responding to something you said or wrote.
Completely. You know?
I like it, Isaac. I like it. Well, honestly, that was as fucking balls out as a free associative experience could ever be.
Yeah, no, we have to find our way back home right now.
Dude, we're so fucking out there. It's amazing. Well, I'll tell you what, Isaac, I'm very excited as I only have two more gigs this year. And it's shocking to think of all the gigs I've played. Like, it's just like as we were watching the documentary, to tie it back to that, you know, the amount of ludicrously crazy, like, what? Like, I never expected to play gigs like the ones I played this year in so many ways. And I'm just, like, baffled that I only have two left. And I'll tell you what they are now, people. One is at the Ogden in Denver, Colorado, on the 29th of December with the one, the only, his name is Marco Benevento. I will be on bass with my dear friend Marco, and I'm really looking forward to that. And then I have a day off on the 30th. And then on the 31st, the final day of the year, Isaac's beautiful mother's birthday. It's known as New Year's Eve, people. New Year's motherfucking Eve. We are going to burn Denver to the ground. Me, with my band, opening for the great Neil Francis, who had airtime at the beginning of this podcast. He's going to get more airtime now, the end. Shout out, Neil. We're very excited to play the show with you. And it's almost sold out. So if you want in, you should probably get in on that, and I really look forward to seeing you there. And it's going to be a really, like, it's been a minute since I've done a proper New Year's Eve gig, Isaac.
Totally.
In fact, I don't know if I've ever done one. Oh, yes, I did. Yes, I did.
BSP Kingston.
BSP Kingston opening for Rubble Bucket with Marco in 2017 into 18. Yes, thank you. Otherwise, I've played, you know, on the 28th, the 29th, the 30th. But that was my one and only New Year's Eve gig, baby.
New Year's Eve, it's beautiful.
Ugh.
You're all together.
Culmination of the year.
You count it down.
You're kissing.
You're hugging.
You're sweating.
You are celebrating life itself.
It's unbelievable. You're repenting. You're thinking about all the shit that you did wrong.
You
you're
are
so
in
fat.
Misery.
You're an alcoholic.
You are sad.
You smell terrible. You are a smoker. You're trying to quit. You are a booze hound. You need to drop it. Whatever it might be, you know that you're trying to get some resolutions up in this piece.
So you go see some music.
So you're at STS9.
Totally spun around.
You are looking into some crystals that the band has positioned on stage for you to stare into. Next thing you know, you stop smoking. You stop drinking. You lose 48 pounds.
It's January. It's cold.
January 8th.
But you're feeling good. Feeling interesting.
Next thing you know, your whole world has been flipped upside down. You have a new perspective. Suddenly, the mystical, sort of dark, snowy, but yet entrenched with some sort of magic goes away. And all of a sudden, you're just fat, sober, and cigarette free by yourself in January. So we look forward to that, Isaac. It's going to be great. I mean, you know.
Shout out to our producer, RJB.
He's
we love
our you.
Main man. He has New Year's plans. We know he does.
Oh, we know he does. Absolutely. He puts us on. We did have dinner with him not long ago. It was the time of our lives. And we look forward to doing it again. Shout out once again to our dear pal, our producer, Marlo Shankweiler on the ones and twos. She produces this podcast. She plays guitar in Melt. Go see her The Days Between in New Orleans. We will keep reminding you of this among other endeavors of hers. And Isaac, damn, we got out here, brother. It's great to be in zero gravity with you once again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Never learned to camp, can't even pitch a tent. I've been jumping turnstiles, hailing taxis with intent. Do you need directions? I bet it's not where you're from.
Osiris. Hi, I'm Dave Gebro. I threw my career as a licensed hearing instrument specialist in the trash, sold my house, and created the ultimate music obsessives podcast, Discograffiti. Each episode of Discograffiti features an eclectic and wide-ranging slew of cool musicians doing long-form, deep-dive interviews in which we rate either their favorite band's output or their own from 0 to 5 stars. From Mike Watt rating the Minutemen to Terry Kirkman from The Association, Bob Nastanovich on Pavement, Bob Forrest on The Band, Bob Mayer on The Replacements, and Lou Barlow on The Zombies, each new guest swings a hard left into an area you either had no idea you needed to know about or know all about and can't believe you're not alone out there. Coming up, here's who we've got on the program. The Lemon Twigs, Robert Schneider from The Apples in Stereo, the Dedrick siblings from The Free Design, Joel Selvin on mother-murdering superstar drummer Jim Gordon, and a record-breaking 20-hour interview with the great Michelle Phillips about the Mamas and the Papas. You're not going to want to miss it because there's nothing quite like it. Don't let your youth go to waste, lads and ladies. Discograffiti. Subscribe.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.